This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for a
turning into a regional conflict, which does pose a threat to the security of the United States.
Only Iraq can save Iraq.
Fighting for Idaho. No,
there was at least one shot fired within the car.
He started to get down, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots, and my friend died.
Fighting for you.
What the heck's going on with the world? You've got Gaza. You've got Iraq. You've got Syria. You've got the Christians being slaughtered. You've got the Chinese. Am I leaving something out? Oh, the border.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning.
That's a lot of ding-dongs.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning. We've been talking about this gentleman all morning long, the highlight of our program for the week. He is Paul Feinbaum, author of My Conference Can Beat Your Conference, the SEC. He's on ESPN, the SEC Network. He's the flagship, he's the franchise, and possibly the reason why DirecTV capitulated and now does have the SEC Network on. Paul Feinbaum joins us now. Good morning, Paul.
Kevin, thank you. And you probably didn't tell your audience that at one time you were my boss, so I'm sure you're just being benevolent.
Well, look, I don't think someone such as you could ever have a boss, sir, but I do have to ask you, and you're a very honest man, what was it like working for me? Because I can be somewhat of a nut.
I thought you were a complete schmuck, to be honest with you.
Yes.
No, I mean, I say this in all sincerity. I mean, you were a great boss because you understood the business and you understood the medium because you actually had been behind a microphone, unlike about 95% of the other bosses I've had in radio who couldn't make it in radio and then decided to become a consultant and luckily or fortunately for them got a job and unfortunately for us. But, I mean, I learned, we were together during some really critical moments in our nation's history, including 9/11, and watching you that day, I learned a lot about the industry.
Well, Paul, I have to say, and I've told the audience this, you know, everybody always wants to be Mr. Big Time, whether it's the next Rush or the next Sean. What I learned from you is that you had such a mastery of a local audience, and you were multi-platform before even anybody could even figure out multi-platform. You were a newspaper writer, the website, the radio show, television, and you owned a local audience. Can you describe what it's like to be that voice in a town?
Well, it's really interesting because most of the early part of my career was in newspapers, and then I morphed into radio, and it wasn't going really all that well. And then suddenly, around the time we were together, it started to percolate. We expanded it from one show to two or three networks, to two or three affiliates, I should say, in Alabama. And I think I was fortunate. I happened to be doing a regional show in Alabama and then the surrounding areas around the very same time as the SEC exploded. The SEC was always big, but it was never just the only thing in town. And it was an interesting confluence of events. And I was also going from 35 to 45, and then I hit 50, and I looked like I was no longer, you know, the Darth Vader of college football. And age, experience, and good fortune all came together at the same time. And even all that, I was told as recently as 2 years ago, Kevin, my contract was up in a couple of months, and I was looking around. SiriusXM had offered me a gig, and I was looking to expand, and I was told by several people in New York, hey, listen, man, you're not going anywhere. You're a local yokel. And I just said, okay, that's fine. I have a good career. And at that moment, the New Yorker magazine decided to do a profile of me. Why, I don't know. They had not done a college football profile in 10 years, and to be perfectly honest with you, Nick Saban never called them back when they called. And 6 months later, after this gentleman had hung out with me, the profile hit, and overnight things changed. I had a book, a literary agent called me the next day. And the book was eventually sold after being bid on by 11 publishers. And as a result of that, ESPN decided, you know what, who is this guy? And once they discovered who I was, they decided to hire me for this new network, which launched last night.
Paul Feinbaum with us, Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO. My conference can beat your conference. And I thought that we would talk about everything but sports here today.
Sounds good to me.
Well, define what you do, because a lot of people think of sports people as yucks and this, that, and the other, and a lot of jocks and everything else, but you bring a different perspective to your job.
Well, I come from newspapers, but not only newspapers. I covered sports, but my interests were always broader than sports. And I was fortunate, it's been interesting, Kevin, being on a book tour, you talk to primarily sports people. And with all due respect, I mean, they are one and the same. It's the opening question. I work for ESPN Radio, so I don't mean this as a criticism, but they all sound like they're trying to become the next Colin Cowherd or Mike and Mike. And my background's in news talk, where you actually have to have a clue once in a while. You know that, and it really helped prepare me. Where if you're talking about a sports story and something terrible happens, whether it be 9/11 or a local shooting like you used to do, you go to that. You're able to go to that. And we both worked with television people and radio people in sports, and they're usually not prepared. And we were prepared, and I think that helps us be conversational. It also helps you connect and communicate with people as opposed to talk over them.
When people talk about success, they always go back to an inner belief. And for people listening right now, Paul Feinbaum, I urge you to watch the SEC Network. You can get him on the ESPN app. You can buy his book, My Conference Can Beat Your Conference, because you had people, and one of the dumbest things that somebody ever told me about you is to make sure that you rein in those crazy callers, particularly B.O.B. I remember our old boss going, you need to ban B.O.B., and I'm going, okay. But you believed in building a community, which is unusual.
Yeah, it's my line on this, Kevin, is pretty simple. Until recently, I didn't have carte blanche to the great guests. I mean, now I will admit, since going to work for ESPN, I mean they bring them by you. But I realized we couldn't in Birmingham get the A-list guests. I mean, you might get one or two here and there, and they'll do a 3-minute interview with you while they're doing a satellite tour. So I began to cultivate callers. They began to prepare their scripts or do whatever, and it began, and it was funny, not always, but most of the time. And at some point I said, you know what, let the inmates run the asylum. A couple of things happened. We went on Sirius XM 5 years ago, which exposed us to a larger audience. But even being on satellite radio doesn't guarantee you of anything, because there's 200 or 300 channels, and most of the channels had never been listened to by anyone. But we began to get some traction. Yes, the show was based in Alabama, but we received calls from Idaho or North Dakota, Washington, Maine, you know, people who had a college sports interest. And then another thing happened on January 27th, 2011. We got a call from a guy named Al who admitted on the air that he had poisoned two trees in Auburn, Alabama. They're called the Tumors trees at Tumors Corner. They are iconic if you follow college sports. And I laughed it off. 2 weeks later, I got a call from a friend of mine who works for a senator on the Homeland Security Subcommittee, and he said, by the way, this guy's about to get arrested. We think it was a terrorist threat. The story exploded. It became one of the biggest stories of the day. A couple of months later, ESPN did a documentary on that, and our audience was then introduced to a much larger audience. And I get to say, even when I went to ESPN, I heard from some, you're not going to put those crazy idiots on the air. And I said, yes, we are. And today our show debuts at 3 Eastern, and it won't be the entire show, but yes, not only will you hear these people, you'll see their pictures.
Well, I was amazed because you were running that on ESPN2 and ESPNU. You haven't changed a bit. How unusual is it for you, the talent here at 580KIDO, to have that much control? And were you surprised that you have this major corporation, politically correct Disney, giving you the ability to have the crazies on?
Well, I mean, it's been vetted, and obviously you have to have some guidelines. And you know, Disney is a big company that has great pride and great importance. But I think you have to also look at it as callers to a radio show, whether it's your show or our show, are just normal people who matter. And you know, I thought about this a couple of years ago. In November of 2011, there was a football game in Tuscaloosa, Alabama and LSU. It was 1-2, one of the biggest college football games that I've ever covered. Although it turned out not to be very important, considering the two teams met 6 weeks later for the national championship. But Kevin, there were 100,000 people inside that stadium in Tuscaloosa, which is understandable. There were 60,000 outside in the quad where everyone gathers at the university, watching it on a jumbotron. And I asked someone who didn't go to the game but who was out there. I said, "Why did you come down here?" He said, "I wanted to be part of it." And I said, "You got to be kidding me." He said, "No, Monday when I go to work, whether it's at a factory or insurance office or a dental office or a lawyer's office, and someone asked me, hey, what'd you do over the weekend? My answer is, I went to the game." And you see that a lot of times now at NFL stadiums, that people just want to be part of it, even though they cannot afford it. I mean, college football is very expensive, but that doesn't mean that the average guy can't go have a beer with his buddies and watch it on a jumbotron. Those are the people who I think make up our show, and I dare say most talk shows in America.
Paul Feinbaum with us. My Conference Can Beat Your Conference. His new book, of course, you can catch him on the SEC Network beginning today. Kevin Miller, 580KIDO. Has sports taken over our life? I mean, in the old days, and you used to come on after Rush Limbaugh, which was very unusual. You know, it was all about Rush. It was all about politics. But have we become just too sports-centered?
Well, to a certain degree. I mean, I was a big News Talk fan, Kevin, like you were. And I listened, and these were my heroes, the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys and Glenn Becks. But at some point, they began, not necessarily to your opinion or my opinion, but to the masses' opinion, to say the same thing. And it began to just drone on, where sports is always different. There is always a game. ESPN on this network that I'm affiliated with had a show last night where they featured a celebrity from every different SEC school. LSU had James Carville. Whether you like him or not, he is a character. And to watch James Carville obsessing over games of his youth at LSU, games of today, looking forward to games of tomorrow, I thought was pretty fascinating. And you know, Willie Geist was from Vanderbilt, and he did the same thing. And you had other, Darius Rucker from South Carolina. And you start going, I mean, these are well-known people who actually care about what we care about. And it brought it home a little bit, where as opposed to listening to anyone, whether it's Limbaugh or the next person, drone on about what's wrong in Washington, which is everything, at least we're celebrating. And you know, sports is not all good. I mean, this NASCAR story is tragic. There are issues in every sport that are part of SportsCenter and part of our show, but there's also great celebration. I'm working with Tim Tebow now on our weekend show, and you know, it's, you know, I just look at this guy and I go, I mean, he transcends sports, like him or not. He's polarizing, but he also is a breath of fresh air. And there are at least good stories in sports, and unfortunately, there aren't too many good stories on the news pages.
One of the things that I've always admired about you, Paul, is you can be critical of someone, but you have them on the air, whether it's the former commissioner of the SEC, Roy Kramer, where his wife would call in and yell at you on the air and the commissioner would come on, or recently you had Mack Brown on and you weren't too kind to him last year, but he was your friend recently on the show.
Yeah, that's always a little tricky. I have changed somewhat. Years ago, I was very personal, and I mean, I was just kind of a raving lunatic on the air, calling people raving lunatics. as you get a little bit older, and I'm in my late 50s, you start to pull back and go, you know what, there's a better way. And that's one thing ESPN has taught me. I got in trouble last year, pretty much right out of the chute. I criticized Johnny Manziel, which was easy to do. And then I said Jadeveon Clowney, the South Carolina player who is now the number one pick at Houston. I said, someone asked me, you know, he didn't play in a game against Kentucky. I said, this guy's laughable. I said, he's the biggest joke in college football. I didn't mean he was personally. I just meant what he's doing. I found myself watching myself about 100 times the next day on SportsCenter. They played the clip over and over again, and it became a major cause celeb. And I realized that it's one thing to say something on a Birmingham radio station when you say it on ESPN, it will resonate. I did a similar thing about a week earlier. I was on game day, and Chris Fowler asked me for my weekly hit, what do you think about Lane Kiffin? I said, I think he's terrible. I said, this guy can't do anything right. I said, he's turned into the Miley Cyrus of college football. That was at 10 o'clock in the morning. 12 hours later in Arizona, the Trojans lost the second game of the season. He was fired on the tarmac at LAX the next morning by Pat Hayden. And many gave me credit or blame me, and the reason was because I told that story to so many people who were influential, including SC boosters. When he lost the game, they were looking for an excuse, and they said, you know what, I mean, even on game day, they're calling for this guy's head. Let's fire him. So you do have to appreciate that for a network like. Other than that, it's pretty much the same.
More coming up with our friend Paul Feinbaum here, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Phone numbers 580 KIDO. We'll have Paul till the bottom of the hour. But coming up, we do want to get back to the source of inspiration of Paul Feinbaum, author of My Conference Can Beat Your Conference. And, you know, he's on radio, he's on television, he's a writer. Did it all come easy for Paul? We'll talk about that and get inspired for our own challenges here in life. Let's get you to work safely and on time. The touchy-feely Kevin
Miller heads to the annual United Way Flapjack Feed, August 21st at the Boise Center on the Grove. Details at 580KIDO.com.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Back to our friend Paul Feinbaum. My conference can beat your conference. I highly recommend it. Why the SEC still rules college football. And Paul, one quick note here before we get back to the non-sports interview. A lot of folks here, they're very proud of Boise State. And, you know, I always take flack because of my time with you and learning the SEC. But your callers, your newsmakers have looked at Boise State for quite some time, whether you were on Sirius XM, ESPN, or even the regional show in Alabama. People talked about Boise down there.
Yeah, I mean, for quite a while, Boise was in everyone's head because you kept thinking, Kevin, that Alabama or Auburn or someone from down here would be playing Boise for the national championship. And it's too bad it didn't happen. I think it would have been such a great moment. But I do have some concern now about where Boise goes from here. And I know this isn't a new topic on your show or in this region of the country, but college football is clearly saying, you know what, we don't want to lose to Boise anymore. We're moving on.
They are with the Power Five.
Yeah.
And you see Chris Peterson leaving. But back to you, because I was shocked reading your book, because you're such a great writer. You're such an excellent communicator, that writing did not come easy for you.
No, I don't think I really ever learned proper English, Kevin, which is important if you're going to become a writer. So I always just put it together in thought. There's such a thing as method acting. I try to do method writing, and it's a stream of consciousness a little bit. I'm not Faulkner or Hemingway, so I would get right to the point and try not to bore people. And I think too often great writers, they are so good that you, unless you appreciate it, you have no earthly idea what they're talking about because they take so long to get to their point. But this book was a challenge because I had a co-writer in it, and the main reason I brought Gene Wojciechowski on is at the time the book deal was struck, I thought I was going to spend the next 6 months in court in radio, so I needed some help. And he sat down with me, was asking me about my life, and I said, Gene, I really don't feel comfortable talking about all this. He looked at me and said, Paul, this book is about you. You better start talking or we're going to have a bunch of blank pages. And, you know, I lost my dad at 15 and my mother took over my life and then I lost her. And, I went through various ups and downs of really not making it in the newspaper business like I had dreamed of. And then radio was a challenge. So, I mean, I've had people tell me that, man, you really had a hard scrabble story. But I think that's how you are defined. And you've been through some ups and downs. And if you haven't, then I don't think you can appreciate what everyone else goes through.
Well, Paul, let's talk a little bit about radio, because you have these young kids today. Everybody wants to get into sports. But in your book, you describe what it's like to be a local guy getting his start and the importance of being real, being relevant. And sometimes you've got to create things to get those phone callers and to get those listeners interested.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in being true, and too often you get a bunch of talk show hosts who just bloviate. It's about connecting, and Kevin, you do it as well or better than anyone I've ever heard. You have to connect to one person. I mean, you're not talking to a group of people. You're not talking to 15 people. Most of the time, you're talking to a guy shaving. You're talking to a guy in his car, a guy at his kitchen table. And what I like about what you do and what I do is, you know, you're singular host. You talk to people. Where most of the time, it's two guys yakking to each other, and they disregard the audience altogether.
Indeed. And speaking of the audience, as I told you off the air, I recently got married, and I've turned my wife, who's a rabid Boise State fan, into a Paul Feinbaum fan. And I said, well, we have Paul on today. You've got Paul? How'd you get Paul? So, again, we're trying to bring the Feinbaum Nation here out west.
Well, I want to congratulate you, Kevin. I mean, you were Birmingham's most eligible bachelor 15 years ago, and I'm surprised it took this long in Idaho. Yeah, I mean, there were posters, pinups of Kevin in sports bars with his number.
Yes, exactly. Paul, finally, what do you say to folks that want to be you? They see you on TV and think, well, I can just be outrageous. They don't know about the endless hours in the studio, worrying about your job, as you describe in the book. You're, you know, being here is the belief of the general manager and sometimes the ratings. What do you say to people that that think it's easy to just get on ESPN and wear a tie?
Well, it's not, and I run into young people all the time. And now, because of ESPN, I asked someone. I said, "Well, what would you like to do?" I want to be on SportsCenter. Well, and you think this person can't construct a sentence? I mean, you have to be able to be conversational. I'm a big believer. It sounds old-fashioned in reading and gathering information. It's Kevin. It's the little things. Yeah, there are stars discovered every day, but I mean, I'll see people and most people lose opportunity because of the most insignificant things. Thanking someone, following up, walking up to someone like you and saying, "Hey, by the way, I'm a big fan. Would you do this?" Most people just assume you're going to become Chris Fowler or Kirk Herbstreit or Chris Berman by osmosis. It just doesn't happen that way. And that's it. It's all, you know, life's a little instructions book. It's and don't sweat the small stuff. It's all the same. It's basic boilerplate. But the best way to get ahead is to take it step by step and be consistent and remember to do the little things, not the big things.
Paul, we could talk forever, but you've got a show to do. You know, thank you very much for taking time. I know you're extremely busy, and we really appreciate it, sir.
Kevin, it's been my pleasure. Congratulations to your wife. She's in for, I don't know, 30 or 40 of the most challenging years of her life. Tell her I'm here. You have my number, and I will try to guide her through what I think could be a nightmare.
And you heard it here first. Paul, take care.
Kevin, talk soon.
All right, our great friend Paul Feinbaum with us here at 580KIDO.
On Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. With the death of Robin Williams, certainly suicide prevention awareness has been raised around the country. But what about the state of Idaho? Remember how long it has taken us to get a suicide prevention hotline here. Joining us now is the program director for the Idaho Lives Project, Kim Kane. Kim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Good to have you here at 580KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning. When you hear the news of a big, famous person committing suicide, what does that do as far as awareness for this disease in your community?
Sure. Well, I think death of a major celebrity like that can have a positive effect in a way, though it's a tragedy, for spreading awareness and getting people to think about suicide and suicide prevention and how we can do more about it. Also, it can be problematic if it's not handled well in the media. It can add to contagion. And I think another thing that the death of a very well-known and well-loved celebrity does, it sort of propels us into thinking about what could make someone take their own lives. And often it's attributed to perhaps a single thing, which is a mistake, because suicide is extremely complex. It's never about just one thing. It's usually due to a myriad of things relating to a number of risk factors. That isn't to say that there can't be a triggering event, but that triggering event is only for someone who is already highly vulnerable for all those other reasons. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, if you will.
Well, you and I talked last night extensively, and I said, hard to believe somebody at the age of 63 would take their own life. And you had some information that I'd love for you to share with us here at 580KIDO.
Sure. Well, what we know, and this is true across the country as well as here in Idaho, is that suicide rates tend to actually increase with age, particularly among men. And men complete suicide 4-to-1 to women. And so we know that when we're talking about working age males, so people maybe the age from 30 to 65, that their rates of suicide can be 4 and 5 times the rate of Idaho as a whole. And for people over age 65, it can be 7 to 9 times the rate for Idaho as a whole.
How are we as a state as far as our resources preventing suicide?
Well, it's been a long haul. I've been doing this for about 10 years, and things, of course, are much better now. We have the suicide hotline back up and running, and that's at 800-273-TALK or 800-273-8255. That's the Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline. And an Idaho a suicide hotline is just the absolute basic that one needs for proper types of intervention. But there's been a lot being done by SPAN Idaho, the Suicide Prevention Action Network of Idaho, as well as other many partners over the years. But there are a lot of things that people can do. There's now the Idaho Lives Project, which is what I am running. And that is a project that is a partnership between SPAN Idaho and the State Department of Education to foster connectedness and resilience among school communities to prevent youth suicide. The nuts and bolts of the program are to provide comprehensive trainings and programs to school communities for schools that apply to the program. And we go in and provide programs for the students, the school staff, the parents, community members, and even the mental health providers and physicians of the area so that they can get proper training. A lot of our mental health folks still don't have enough training specifically in how to treat suicidal people. And so we're trying to bring that to communities around Idaho. And people can find out more about it, or if schools want to apply for the program, they can do that at idaholives.org. We also have the Governor's Council on Suicide Prevention, which has been active since about 2006. So there are many partners, including our Department of Health and Welfare and others, who are doing a variety of activities from general awareness to specific training to even working with the media.
Well, we appreciate you working with the media. That's a motley crew.
It can be. And the media really, we're trying to help those in the media understand the impact that they have on suicide rates, because it's well shown right now that handled well, the media can help prevent suicides, and handled poorly can increase suicide rates for an area. So education is really important, and I truly appreciate opportunities like this.
Kim Kane with us, Program Director for the Idaho Lives Project. Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. It's been a popular saying, a popular myth. You and I talked about this last night, where people have labeled people in the past suicide, people that have killed themselves, as a very selfish act, and you wanted to address that today.
Yeah, I think it can certainly appear to be a selfish act to those who are left behind. Absolutely. No question, people who are suicide survivors and have lost a loved one, it can seem that way. But we understand more now about the suicidal mind than we have ever. And what we know is in place for someone who completes suicide is a couple of things. They have come to feel that, number one, that they don't belong. They're not connected to others. Even if they're surrounded by friends and family, they feel like they aren't connected. But the other is that they have what's called perceived burdensomeness. It means they feel they're a burden to others. They have come to fully believe, wrongly, but it's their perception that they believe that their death would be worth more than their life to the people around them. And they firmly believe it. So in their minds, in their, again, someone who is highly suicidal is not in a rational state of mind. So in their irrational state of mind, they firmly believe that what they're doing will be of benefit to the people that they're leaving behind. Again, that's a wrong assumption, but they've come to believe that, which is not selfish at all. They truly believe that their death would be worth more than their life to those left behind. It's very sad.
What are some of the signs that we should all be looking out for when we're looking at loved ones, people at work, that can give us some real insight here today at 580KIDO?
Sure, that's a great question. We know that most suicide prevention experts now tell us that there are warning signs about 100% of the time. And we know that 70% of the time, that's a person making actual statements to people. So threatening suicide or talking about suicide, sometimes with a direct statement that they're going to die by suicide, or something indirect like, pretty soon you may not have to worry about me. Certainly, if people have previous suicide attempts, they're at very high risk. If they're seeking methods to kill themselves, the means to kill themselves, that's a high warning sign. So are some other things like agitation. People who are highly suicidal are agitated, and that usually leads to sleeplessness. So sleep troubles, hopelessness, nightmares in and of themselves are a warning sign. People are having a lot of nightmares. So changing the eating patterns, mood changes, increased use of drug and alcohol, basically changes in the behaviors of that person. And any of those warning signs, and a more complete list can be found at spanidaho.org. Any of those warning signs is may not be reason to believe that someone is suicidal, but any warning sign is a reason to check in with the person and ask them if they're okay. If you see several signs, or if the person is talking about suicide, that's a reason to ask them straight out, are you thinking about suicide?
And it can happen to anybody.
Absolutely. Suicide knows no bounds, no socioeconomic class, no religion, no ethnicity, is immune from suicide.
Now, let's talk about the young people, because when we think of it, we always think of the young people committing suicide. With social media, with the prescription culture that we have, with our young people exposed to more stimuli, whether it's media or electronics or what have you, are these the same signs that you should look for in your young person if they're having a rough go at it?
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition, with young people, you'd want to be looking for changes in their schoolwork or how they're behaving with their friends. And it's so, so critical for young people to know not to keep this a secret. That's one of the most important things that we can do for kids, is help them understand that if they or their friend is thinking about suicide, that's not the time to keep that code of silence and not to tell adults. So that's critically important. And part of what the Idaho Lives Project is doing is bringing a program to Idaho called Sources of Strength. And what we need to do for kids is help them to identify a trusted adult that they can talk to so that they'd be willing to reach out if they or a friend is in trouble, and to foster resilience and connectedness among kids, because, as I mentioned, people who die by suicide, including kids, feel like they don't belong. And that's something we have a lot of power to affect. Simply smiling at somebody can give them a sense of belongingness. And with social media, I know that kids are exposed to a whole lot more. We know that kids, though, are pretty good at understanding when it comes to watching things on the computer or video games. We know that as young as age 3, kids are able to discern what's pretend and what's happening in real life. And so kids who are suicidal are most affected by what's happening to them in real life. And when it comes to things like cyberbullying and that type of thing, certainly bullying is a risk factor, but it's also important for kids to understand that bullying does not cause suicide on its own. And I'm afraid that message has been out there and they've seen it, and many of them believe it. Bullying is a risk factor, but lots and lots of kids are bullied and they make it through it and they get help. So bullying is just one risk factor, and we need to do a lot more about bullying, especially cyberbullying. But it's important to understand that that's not a cause of suicide.
Kim, a final question, and again, we're going to reach out and partner with you in the future on many more events and projects. But, you know, as I told you last night, and I've told people, you know, I lost my best friend, and every day I pray for him, every day I miss him. What do you say to people that are survivors of suicide that have lost someone close to them in their lives?
All right, absolutely. I'm so sorry about your loss. And on the SPAN Idaho website, spanidaho.org, there's a list of suicide survivor support groups around the state, and those can be extremely helpful. Also, if you know folks who just haven't had any resources about how a suicide death is a different type of death for those left behind. And there are a number of resources, including suicide support packets that you can get from SPAN Idaho that have a wealth of information for them to help people with this grieving process. So SPAN Idaho can be a wealth of information for suicide survivors. And I'll also mention that SPAN Idaho is having its annual conference here in Boise on September 11th and 12th. And survivors are welcome to attend that as well. You can find out more, again, at spanidaho.org.
Kim, finally, the suicide prevention hotline again?
Yes, 1-800-273-TALK.
Talk. And we'll put that on our blog posting today. Kim, we appreciate it. I know it's a little hectic, but great information.
Thank you so much.
All right, there we have it. Kim Kane joining us. Real life tips. Remember that number, 1-800-273-TALK. Time for traffic. Kevin Miller in the morning. Bye. Coming up next, it's the rage of media, television, and even radio. Why are people dumping buckets of ice on their head? Here's a clue. It's for a great cause. We'll discuss next and find out what you can do. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Serving.